When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
It's the football ramble, ladies and gentlemen.
You had an air of a man who's just come out of a hedge.
Hello.
Yeah.
What are you doing in my food?
When I was in Edinburgh, I saw two homeless people recognise each other. And from the looks of it, they weren't homeless when they last knew each other. And the bloke was like, oh, how are you doing? I said, what do you think he's doing? He's the same as you.
It's the football ramble, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello.
Start as we left off last week, I guess.
I am Marcus Speller. I never introduce myself.
You don't?
It's certainly not first.
No.
But we're unconventional.
The
this
first
week.
Shall be last in the kingdom of the ramble.
Clever. Mm. James or Jim is here.
Hello.
And Pete Donaldson's here.
Howdy.
And Luke is not. He's away sunning himself.
Still on holiday.
I think he's almost home. I think he's... is he back tonight?
I don't know. He might be after? Might be in the air as we speak.
Mm. Yeah. Well,
yeah. He's up in
like
the air.
Fog.
Up in the... Oh, yeah. He could be mistaken for a cloud, to be fair. Right, gentlemen, let's get on with the show. In light of Liverpool's goal, first goal against Sunderland, where I suppose Torres nicked the ball off Michael Turner, who played it back to the goalkeeper. And he said he wasn't ready for it. They scored, and one team had stopped playing. The other team carried on. There was a bit of confusion. Chaps, a goal, a favourite goal or a memorable goal that reminds you of that kind of thing? James?
I'm going to go for probably the most famous example of this, which was when Arsenal played Sheffield United in the FA Cup, I think it was, in 1999.
Yeah.
And basically what happened is the ball had gone out because the Sunderland player was injured. They put it out and I forget who took the throw, but Kanu ended up with a ball and he basically ran
Didn't
down the wing.
Run down the right?
No, it was Kanu who ran down and okay. He... crossed it in for Overmars to score.
Oh, right.
And Carney later claimed he didn't... I've heard two different things about this. One was that he didn't realise that was a custom here, and the second one was that he just didn't know that was what had happened, because bear in mind, he would have been about 40 at the time.
Well, so his mind was... suffered from memory loss of what happened.
His mind was probably elsewhere, but they replayed the game, didn't they? Wenger offered to replay the game, Steve Bruce took it up, and scoring ended up being the same. Can you imagine that now?
Wenger would never replay the game now.
No, with the fixture congestion and right. general stubbornness.
Mm. Yeah, good, strong start.
I'm going to go for the West Ham Man United match when Di Canio.
Was it Old Trafford?
I believe so.
It was, yes.
When Di Canio ran through.
Oh, yes.
Took it past Barthez, and Barthez just had his hand up. He didn't even bother trying to save the goal.
Oh, that was when they thought he was offside and he ran through.
Barthez. Sorry, Pete, carry on.
No.
Well, Barthez was really good for like a monumental cock-up every now and then, wasn't he? Obviously, he was a very good keeper, but he just lost his head so often.
Imagine having the balls to do that, though.
But that wasn't so much of a cock-up, I think. I mean, Barthez...
Didn't you want to say that Barthez later admitted that he just put his hand up because...
Yeah.
Just to put him off, basically.
Well, that's right. I think Barthez tried to do a bit of gamesmanship, and it didn't work. Di Canio just carried on and slotted it in. And they won the game 1-0. That was the only
two
goal.
Two stubborn mental men.
Di Canio too stubborn to think I'm offside. Well, no, but Di Canio's played to the whistle. Rule number one is don't play the ball across the face of your own area.
No. Rule number 0.5 is if in doubt, kick it out.
In England, at
a corner, 0.25 point is at a corner. After the ball's being played, everyone shouts, "Get out! Get out!" Even if you're not playing with a linesman. So offsides are negligible.
The sweeper shouting, "Come back!" Do you think in Spain they say, if in doubt, knock it out?
No, probably not.
Maybe in Spanish, like a sort of rhyming equivalent.
What is that? I don't know. You're good at Spanish.
No, I'm not.
You are. You always claim you're not, and then we go to places where you have to speak it, and you're fine.
Yeah.
That's not true.
Yes, it is.
I didn't get on very well in Italy with it.
You did.
Did I?
You actually did. You were speaking Spanish to Italian people, and they knew what you meant.
Pissed off.
Well, they were generic Italians. They were just gesticulating. They weren't angry.
Yeah. It's mainly sign language. What am I going to go for?
That's what you tell us now.
Yes, that's a good one, Pete. I'm going to say USA 94.
Right.
Any opportunity. The whole tournament. No, it was when Brazil played Holland in the quarterfinal. And it was a great game. Brazil won 3-2. Branco scored an outrageously far-out free kick. I mean, the yardage.
Man,
rather than
this is far out.
I knew.
A rainbow came off the back of it.
Yeah, you have to watch what you say around here.
You certainly do.
It was the second goal Bebeto scored, and it was another offside one again, Pete, like yours. And he was put through, and it was at the time, I think, when the rule was kind of changing on who's interfering with play, who isn't. Romario was offside. Some of the Dutch defenders had stopped. Bebeto went through, slotted in, and did the famous baby celebration, which I'm doing now, to remind you.
Oh,
the cradling
that
the baby.
Is.
Cradling the baby, that's enough.
I thought you were pulling a massive hose from me.
I'm going to give out points then.
Hey.
Go on, Pete, you have them.
Sweet.
Gah.
So who's had them in Luke's absence? Jim's had some.
You've had them
some.
Each. Yeah. It's almost like I've fixed it, so that's the way it went.
Oh, you're literally pointless, Marcus.
Right, on to proceedings. Liverpool 2, Sunderland 2. Should the goal have stood or should it not?
Of course it should have.
A lot of people are arguing this, aren't they? It has caused quite a lot of furore because by the letter of the law, it is, you know, he's taken the free kick there. I think the main issue with it is that Atwell wasn't looking at the ball. He's got to be concentrating on what's actually going on, and that's a huge, huge thing.
So, I mean, the whole of Five Live over that weekend was just grotesque. They have a lot of Liverpool supporting presenters, to be quite frank, but 606 was a big mess because it was just people just sort of going, well, you know, letter of the law states this is a case, but common sense must prevail. No, the letter of the law must prevail. Yeah. That's what you all complain about in 606.
Rules do not have emotions.
Not in this studio, they don't, Joe.
It's just the whole situation is quite weird, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of talk as well that Torres was kind of unsporting, and I suppose there's certainly an element of that to it. It's just you could tell Liverpool are in a situation where they need to just grab at anything they can if this sort of thing's going on.
Was it Dion Dublin against Newcastle where Shea Given balls out the ball and that could have been my choice, but I guess
that's a better one as well.
Double
points, check him out.
I don't think the goal should have stood.
Okay, was that?
Marcus.
I'll explain. Because Turner clearly is just knocking the ball back to the keeper to take the free kick. And if you look, when Torres runs for the ball, Turner just runs past Turner. He doesn't care. Mm. If he'd have thought, oh, crap, I've played it short, he would have turned around.
He would have run back and...
And therefore, as far as I'm concerned, Turner wasn't putting the ball into play.
But we shouldn't have to look at players' facial expressions to see that, you know, if he... It was in between the goalkeeper and him. Mm. And to be fair, the actual infringement happened where the ball was anyway. So why was he knocking it back, as I recall?
He's
giving back yards as opposed to stealing them.
Yeah. The FA have actually backed Stuart Atwell on this. Their claim is that you don't have to blow the whistle to sort of indicate that the ball, that the free kick can be taken. Mm. And it's often about sort of minute gestures and stuff like that. So it's a very weird situation, isn't it?
Yeah.
Quick thinking from Torres as well,
yeah,
which no one's really sort of mentioned. And also, because of everything that happened in the game, including Steven Gerrard's elbow, which I'm sure we'll get onto, it's kind of been missed that Gerrard's goal was brilliant.
Yeah, it was.
An incredibly quick reaction.
It came out. I don't know how he managed to even direct that ball. It was so quick. Quick at his face.
Yeah.
I would have ducked out of the way.
Exactly. Instinctively, I think you would. It was a great goal. Gerrard must be tired of digging them out of holes by now, surely. He and Torres, if this season continues the way it is. I mean, I know everyone said this last season, but surely. I mean, Torres, the body language doesn't look great, does it? And. Just wonder where they're going.
Well, I think Liverpool fans are waiting for Joe Cole really to kick in. I think he's done okay of late, but really to start being a match winner, you know.
Yeah, which we all know he's capable of.
Something has to sort of change very, very quickly. I see sort of Gerrard Not remonstrate. What's the opposite of remonstrating with a crowd? Sort of just
demonstrate.
Well, I guess well, they're doing the demonstrating, and he's sort of agreeing with them and giving them a little nod and stuff about the Gillette and Hicks nonsense. But,
yeah.
But that needs to be resolved sooner rather than later. Is it October? Mm. It's all going to be.
Well, I don't know, because there's been a lot of talk that it's going to be resolved very soon, and then it just never happens, doesn't it? I hope for their sake that they can get it sorted out soon. Cause
absolutely. Manchester City beat Chelsea 1-0. Chelsea have finally lost, and nobody took advantage.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, they lost a few days previously, Peter. We have to come to you for a quote here. Newcastle actually went to Stamford Bridge and won. It was League Cup, but Shola Ameobi scoring the winning goal.
I think both teams, people sort of talk about Chelsea having a bit of a scratch team out. We had a scratch team out.
Yeah.
We made 10 changes.
Shola Ameobi was in it.
And Shola Ameobi was in it, for example. scoring two excellent strikers' goals. Yeah. And with a nonchalant sort of, I do this every week, sort of look as he strolls off. Yeah. It was wonderful, wonderful.
Wonderful.
Wonderful to see.
Well, you know, even a stopped clock occasionally finds a nut. So.
Very good, you little hijacker. Tevez scoring for City, murking John Terry again.
Mm.
I liked his T-shirt.
What did it say?
Happy birthday, Mum.
Oh, that's nice. If he'd have been booked for that, it would have been absolutely scandalous. Yeah. And an insult to mums everywhere.
Exactly. And I think that's why he didn't.
I thought Boyata was quite lucky. He was shouldering Drogba about quite a bit, wasn't he? He knocked him off. Well, he didn't have the ball, and I imagine this is why he got away with this, but he just barged him over in the box, and there was nothing said of it. And I like that he's called Boyata. It makes you want to sort of go, attaboy, Boyata. Or it does me, anyway.
Yeah, no, I think... Yeah.
This might that sort of result might really kick on Man City's season.
Yeah, absolutely.
They've been stuttering, I think, at best.
They've been very inconsistent.
Very quickly.
But I think it also shows that Chelsea can be shut out, and they can actually be dealt with, because it's the first real test Chelsea have had, and they've failed it apart from the might of Shola Ameobi.
First time we won in like since 1986, I think, in Stamford Bridge.
Really. My goody old. Arsenal, James, or Jim.
Dear. Let's start off by congratulating West Brom on genuinely being the better side and just wanting it more and just playing the ball very well and just generally being absolutely fantastic. When you look at the start they've had some tough games and they're fifth. They've got a lot of difficult games out of the way. They could, you know, really
away to Arsenal,
do well this
away
season.
To Chelsea. Was it 6-0?
Yeah, but still.
I mean, they were 3-0 up.
Yeah, and with a penalty saved as well.
That's right.
Which is absolutely astounding. And Arsenal just didn't look out the races. And it's just, Wenger said after the game, I didn't recognise my team, I don't know what was going on. And it's just, again, it's Arsenal players coasting through games, thinking they're going to win just by turning up. We look at Wigan last season, with 2-0 up, lost 3-2 to Wigan. I mean, no disrespect for them, but that shouldn't happen for a team claiming to be fighting for the title, you know? Mm. I mean, again, no disrespect to West Brom, you've got to win that game
at
home.
Of course. Absolutely.
Ridiculous.
I mean, and then Chelsea are dropping points.
Yeah.
And people aren't capitalising.
And I mean, the one positive is Sami Najri's performance. Whenever he's had to deputise for Fabregas, he flourishes in that role. Mm. He really, really does play. You get so much more out of him there.
It was a weird weekend all round, wasn't it? I mean, it's rare what you'd say the big three teams were. They all lost. Two of them lost.
Man United drawing as well.
Yeah. But just before we move on, a little note on West Brom. Odemwingie scoring. Good to see him enjoying his football. Recently, now he was the player who played for Lokomotiv Moscow. West Brom signed them from there. And he had a bit of a tough time in Russia towards the end, certainly. The Lokomotiv Moscow fans put up the banner, I'm sure we've all seen that, which says, "Thanks West Brom," as in thanks for taking him off our hands. And there was a picture of a banana on there. And obviously a lot of controversy, because it's disgraceful behaviour. Mm. But the Russian...
It's horrible racism.
Exactly. The Russian Football Union Director General, Alexei Sorokin, now he said, I think it was last week, he said that the reason for this banana being in the picture, he said that the fans, the reason for the reaction of the fans to Odemwingie, he said, apparently the fans were not happy with the fact he plays better for Nigeria and worse for the club. That's why they've shown their satisfaction after he left. He said it's nothing racial in it. He said the reaction would be the same if it was a player from Russia, Denmark, Denmark, Norway, or Japan, for example. He said, in Russia, to get a banana means to fail a test somewhere. And about 5 years ago, one Russian international was booed as well and received the same banners. And he said the phrase to get a banana existed in the time of the Soviet Union, and it's kind of sort of disappeared. Odem Wingi was asked by a Russian newspaper what he thought of this, and he said he'd never heard of that expression.
I think a lot of Russians have said that as well.
Yeah, that's right. To be fair. Well, James Appel, who writes an excellent Eastern European football blog for us on our website, I was talking to him about this, and he said, yeah, it just doesn't really... He's not heard of this, and a lot of Russians, as you say, Pete, haven't heard of this. One Russian fan said, the Russian Football Union are now inventing their own language, so perhaps next time fans will make a banner featuring a monkey, and the RFU will say, oh, in Russian, it'd be cool to be a monkey. It's a statement of respect for the player. So,
wow.
And FIFA and UEFA have kind of said they can't do anything about this. They said only the competition organiser can issue the sanctions. If it's a league match, it has to be the Russian Football Union, and if it's obviously a UEFA match, then UEFA take up the reins there. So,
I just don't understand why we have these sort of silos of organisation and responsibility that can't sort of... FIFA's surely the governing body for everyone.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? FIFA can step in at any point, like, because they're breaking the rules there. Surely there are rules against flagrant racism like that. If we start using our hands in the Premier League, are they going to go, well, we can't do anything about it? It's the FA. The FA are allowing it, so we can't do anything. It's ridiculous. And also, that explanation is ridiculous as well. They might as well be saying, no, it's just a reminder to West Brom fans, because they're so fat, to eat more fruit.
Five a day, yeah. I think, is the message there. Which is, well, that's how I interpret it, anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interestingly enough, of course, Russia are wanting to host the World Cup.
It's political correctness gone mad, really, isn't it?
Racism is political correctness gone mad. Literally.
Yeah.
Actually, there was one thing on this as well, where somebody from FIFA was asked if Russia should be able to host the World Cup with this, in light of this, and he just sort of batted that away, saying, well, you're putting an opinion in that question very clearly, and they basically just didn't respond, which I think is absolutely the right thing to do, because they do have to be fair to Russia there. They can't tar everybody with that brush just because one club has done that, and I think that's absolutely the right thing from FIFA.
Yeah. Well done, FIFA.
Mm.
I don't know whether that's good or bad. Anyway, back to the Premier League, and as you said earlier, Pete or James, Bolton and Manchester United drew, and Manchester United didn't take Manchester United didn't capitalise on Chelsea's loss.
No.
Nice to see Michael Owen scoring.
It's always
going to be.
I knew that someone was going to say Henry Winter.
It's excitable at the very least, I think. Yeah. I don't know. It was a good header from him. Nice to see him sort of rising.
Mm.
Kind of old English,
like an injured salmon.
This weekend,
Heskey rising,
Owen rising.
Yeah, like a salmon donkey, I suppose.
James, are you a big fan of English strikers rising?
I enjoy any striker rising. It's a really important part of the game. Like, it frustrates me when people cross into Peter Crouch and he doesn't jump.
Yeah,
they're crossing it in because you're so tall.
Mm. He'll never get the nickname the loaf.
What does that mean?
Well, bread rises.
Rubbish. Absolute rubbish.
Well, off the cuff. Do you think the press is to blame for Rooney's bad form?
No, I think the football's to blame. it's clearly
the actual ball itself.
It's too quick for him, and his legs as well. Mm. His legs and the ball are very much to blame.
Okay, well, Kevin Keegan.
Kevin Keegan, a man who knows about bottling under pressure. My word.
Yeah.
Well, he said about Rooney's bad form, he said, you can't have all the contracts, sell your wedding to magazines and things like this, and suddenly say, that's the tap I want to turn on, but we want to turn the other one off.
It's an oddly worded statement, but I think
what
I know what you mean.
One of those taps where you don't.
A mixer.
It's just the one.
A mixer tap. I just worry that, like, what's the hot tap? What's the cold tap? Is the hot the sexual allegations? And the cold tap is the cool money flooding in. Wedding.
Cool money sounds like a
rapper.
The
cold hard cash.
The wedding shill.
The wedding shill. Yeah, Keegan makes a fair point, I suppose, but I don't think Rooney's going, oh, woe is me, stop following me around. He does seem to be just getting on with it and getting depressed by it. Which
it's Ferguson that keeps saying that the press are making his form bad.
The footballers have to understand that, you know, if they are a scalp, and they are a scalp for paparazzi, for media conglomerates and ladies, to be quite frank, who want to make a bit of cash, so, you know what I mean? He's Wayne Rooney. Wear a moustache or something.
yeah, it's a good idea. Or just get some sort of Play-Doh plastic surgery on your face. Yeah, just do it yourself.
So if a footballer does want to meet up with a lady of the night, then he should wear a disguise.
Yes, I think
and
so.
And that removes all moral
What's
responsibility.
Yeah.
When this came up before and he slept with that nan, the stuff in the papers were saying about how he met some fans afterwards and they were cheering him on. But the way it was written made it look like they knew he was up there with her and were going, Rooney, Rooney, as he was performing, shall we say.
I remember them sort of saying that he was signing autographs in the waiting room. Don't sign autographs!
Yeah. That I don't believe.
You can write a statement around it then and say, "This I was definitely here."
Can I turn your attention to the Championship?
You can.
You can do, yeah.
Yeah, good. Portsmouth have got a win and a mighty win.
What a win as well.
Hey. Leicester were down to 10 men, but still a 6-1 victory, Pete.
It's a romp.
We finished about talking about romp. Yeah, they won 6-1.
I'm glad the talking fan isn't here.
Well, Luke Miller.
Well, actually, we got an email on that subject, which I'll dive straight in with. Hi, Ramble. Hello.
Hello.
Because last week, obviously, we had a fan, didn't we? By which I mean like a fan that keeps you cool, rather than just like a supporter. Fan. And the email goes on to say, with Luke away for the next Ramble, will the fan that replaced him momentarily be making a return? I thought the fan made a lot of sense and had some decent points to make. It also didn't keep trying to shoehorn Portsmouth into the conversation. Kind regards, Phil. So we're in a different place today, so we don't have a fan.
Yeah, we have air conditioning. You can't really.
Yeah,
hear
you
that.
Can't hear it. No. But I assure you, it's good.
the fan is okay. He's fine.
The fan is in two bits actually, because we moved studios. Yeah, so we usually record it.
Basically,
so I had to bag everything up.
The fan's died.
The fan's died
since the last show.
It may
sadly,
not have made it to the next studio.
Anyway, Portsmouth. They beat Leicester 6-1. I went to the Isle of Wight on the weekend.
That's right, near
and
Portsmouth.
I was on.
I've been
the
there.
Boat.
Lots of dogs on the beach. Good.
Yep, we like dogs and beaches. I was on the boat and I didn't know the score, and I got on and lots of happy Portsmouth fans. I thought something's happened. And I kept hearing scores of 6-1, and I thought, surely not. But it was.
It was. Yeah.
Absolutely incredible.
Nuge scored, didn't he?
David Nugent scored.
What's it goblin Dave Kitson? He scored.
Liam Lawrence scored.
Yes. Good player, Liam Lawrence. It's a real coup for Portsmouth, getting him.
While I was on the Isle of Wight, James, you phoned me while I was watching a football match.
Yeah, I thought you were in a riot.
As James phoned me, a man scored from a corner.
Direct from a corner,
Pete.
Oh, I like those. Was it a windy day?
No.
Just horribly inept.
Bang it around.
Yeah, James said, you never see that in professional football. I said, no, because it's easily dealt with.
Man on the back post, man on the front post. Yeah. Dealt with.
Actually, I was there to see my friend Dan. He scored two goals.
Well done, Dan.
Okay.
Yeah, friend of the show, Dan Monaghan. There you are.
Where does he play?
So-and-so.
On the Isle of Wight.
He plays
Power
on the Isle
League.
Of Wight.
I don't know what their league called.
He plays up front.
Huh.
Yeah. Running around like a busy little bee. Also in the Championship, the other outstanding result for my money, and I won't talk about anyone else's, it was Derby 5, Palace 0.
Huge win. Was Edgar Davids playing left back again?
The next bit that is going to come up here.
But no, but it kind of, I mean, James, you were talking about last week teams who are right next to each other in the table as they are hammering each other.
Yeah.
And that's an example of it.
But it's just people sort of switching off, really, and just sort of going, well, we've let three in, may as well.
Yeah.
May as well give the fans a bit of a show.
Yeah. While we're on the subject of Derby County.
Here we go. This is what I was waiting for.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
They have a goalkeeper called Stephen Bywater.
They do.
He was
one of England's next big things for a long time, wasn't he, Stephen Bywater?
That
was very hotly tipped.
A goalkeeper. He's suddenly come out with some very odd artwork in his garden.
Mm.
He's got apparently had a crane lifted in at a Portaloo toilet. He covered it with graffiti. He's got a horse box with a blow-up doll with it.
It's a sex doll, isn't it?
It's a sex doll. And all sorts of other weird things. He describes these items in his front garden as a masterpiece. The neighbours aren't happy, and after a little dispute, Bywater said he will take it all down. It's worth Googling that, because
yeah,
I can just try and describe it, but the pictures says 1,000 words.
There's more to the story than that, because the neighbours have claimed that they were having like a long-running dispute, and they're taking this as a massive act of sarcasm. He's doing this to just really piss them off, that he's putting this eyesore in and claiming it's art. That's what they're saying.
It's so weird.
It's got peace written on it, hasn't it? But P-I-E-C-E, which is just a really odd word to write on anything that's standalone.
It's just kind of like, it's more of a scandal than the Rooney thing, I think. I genuinely do that. Because it's not even outsider art, it's very much a man who's probably not as intelligent as most artists, I guess.
Oh, yeah, you would think.
This is art! Yeah. Look at this. Anyone can do modern art.
Waterloo and a sex doll. Yeah. Well, so-called modern art. You should call it so-called modern art. That's a big gripe amongst the older generation.
Formerly known as
stupid.
It's all a bit much, that's what I'd say, Marcus.
Words fail me.
Well, why can't you just have a nice painting of a landscape?
Anyway, let's move on from ridiculous things. Paul Gascoigne has been appointed manager of non-league Garforth Town.
Classic link. That's your Cruyff turn, that is.
Is that right? Yeah. Except he mastered his. Gazza's back in town. Garforth Town.
Specifically, yeah.
Yeah, his previous job, of course, was manager of Kettering. That was a little while ago now. That lasted 39 days. After the owner sacked him. The Garforth owner, Simon Clifford, said, "This is not a publicity stunt."
Right, stop right there. Stop right there.
Quotes is on hold for the moment, Pete.
It clearly is.
Right, well, he goes on to say,
"He turned up with a fishing rod and a football in its dressing ground, and I realised, yeah, he's ready, he's back."
I knew the fishing rod was going to be said. He said, "This is not a publicity stunt. When we signed Socrates and Kareka, that was..." "Everyone says they love Paul, but nobody does anything about it."
This is not doing something about
it. This is exploiting it for
publicity.
He's going
to turn up drinking brandy like he does every day. Christ.
Oi, easy on the mic.
This isn't helping him.
Yeah,
if the FA has to step in with anything, they should step in with stuff like this. He doesn't need this.
Gazza seems to be going down the leagues until he finds his managerial level, which is emphatically a pub team.
He
seems to be sliding down towards that.
He doesn't need this, according to Pete Donaldson.
He doesn't.
Well, he doesn't. Look at the Real Moat thing. That wasn't that long ago.
I could just imagine you, Pete, outside the gates of Garforth Town as Gazza arrived.
No.
And you being held back by Stuart Smith by going, "He doesn't need this!
He doesn't need it.
Don't tell me what to do, Pete!"
Let me read this quote. "I want him to be an inspiration to someone who might have depression or problems in their lives. He's walked through hell, but has kept on walking. He's walking in a zigzag line."
How?
Because he's drunk.
How many alcoholics aspire to be like Gazza?
He's not an inspiring figure
at this moment in time,
and he hasn't been for a very long time. And this is not... whose idea is this? Whose idea? Who wants him in the public eye, so to speak? Who wants his big media sales around
town
so he can go and bloody...
Are you having a breakdown, Peter?
I'm just annoyed, to be honest.
It would be lovely if he could sort of get them playing some nice football and start enjoying it and actually get some stability there and stay there for a while, but I just can't see it happening.
He needs to find peace away from football, and that's the bottom line.
You bang on with that, Pete, because he's tried this so many times and it always ends in the same way.
Yeah. Well, as you say, James, who knows? Let's hope for a flipping miracle when he sorts himself out and all goes well. But watch this space, really, on that one. Mm. Right, let's go round some European leagues.
Mm. Go and knock on Serie A's door.
Well, Primera Liga first, James.
All right. Play run-outs.
Serie A will... Yeah, we've knocked and run. We've knocked down Ginger there with Serie A, and we've moved on to the Primera Liga. Now, we talked about Hercules, newly promoted Hercules, when they beat Barcelona at the Nou Camp. Well, they've got another scalp. They've beaten Sevilla 2-0.
Yeah, Trezeguet
got 2, didn't it? Love affair.
It is. Very good. David Trezeguet, as you say, James, scoring 2 goals there. He's nearly 33, old Trezeguet.
Yeah.
He's one of those players who has just been around for years,
hasn't
he?
Yeah, he has.
When he retires, you'll think, what?
Definitely.
You know,
but he still doesn't...
Older,
he doesn't seem old to me.
No.
Because he came through very young, didn't he? So he always seemed like a young player. And I just feel like he's about 28.
I do as well.
But that he has been for about a decade.
Mm. Well, what a glorious decade. Jose Mourinho's been piping up. Can you believe he's claiming that other teams in Spain make life easy for Barcelona? This is such a classic thing for managers to do, isn't it? How many times have we heard that about Manchester United or Chelsea from either boss? He says apparently when teams play Barcelona, they field understrength sides. And
but I mean,
but does he mean comparatively?
Yeah, I think so.
I can't
yeah.
play this, but I just think that I just think with him, he will use any advantage to his advantage. He will use anything.
Well, he's already ahead.
So if you can't criticise other teams for resting players, because at the end of the day, there's no point in going up against Barcelona with a side that's worth £5 million. You're just going to get
all right, Mick McCarthy.
Well, Mourinho is already starting the siege mentality, isn't he? He is. You know, he's making it look like Barcelona get favourable treatment and Real Madrid are hard done by and everybody hates them, blah blah blah, and that's what he's done wherever he's been, and it's worked. So this should not be a surprise to anyone, really.
But I think Madrid are a different kettle of fish slightly, because they are one of the two huge teams in Spain. Now obviously Inter are a big side, but I just think that even some people in Madrid will find it hard to think, what, everyone's against us, you know. I think maybe I'm not sure if people are going to run with that like they might have done elsewhere.
Well, you know, we'll see, won't we? But it's clearly this is the mechanism starting to turn. Is that a thing?
The Mourinho mechanism. We'll go
Mourinho-ism. Yeah, when we went to go and see Barcelona, a lot of people were smoking weed, so maybe the Barcelona, they'll be paranoid, but for a different reason. Right. The paranoia of siege mentality. Yeah. I'm just going to stay here and smoke.
And shell peanuts and laugh every time something good happens, which is about every 30 seconds.
An irrelevant opinion.
Not even really an opinion, just the regaling of an experience.
But well worth it, though, ladies and gentlemen. Right, James, it's Serie A time.
Yes.
And let me tell you, people, Serie A, at the moment, 5 games in, is outrageously tight. from 1st to 20th, that's top to bottom, 9 points separate them. Now, OK, there's only 5 games, but still, let's just move that one up a notch. 1st to 19th, from Internacional to Lecce, 5 points separate them. 5 points separate 1st to 19th. That is incredible.
It is.
There's a lot of draws around mid-table, isn't there?
Yeah, there is indeed. But into top, joint top with Lazio, you know. But wonderful. Wonderful reading, that is.
Everyone's lost a game. That's the thing. Like, that's the weird thing.
Yeah, there's no undefeated team. Yeah.
Well, it's a bit fresh, isn't it? Because obviously Inter dominated under Mourinho and had this style. But Benitez has come in, it's going to be a bit different. And it just seems, the league is bearing out that it's quite open.
League table doesn't lie.
No. Unless you change it, you doctor it in some way.
Well, that's you doing the lying.
Well,
Roma beat Inter on the weekend.
Late diving header.
It was a beautiful diving header.
Vucinic,
it wasn't
good player. Yeah. Should see him in the Premier League.
Did you see Roma when they played Brescia in midweek? There was a couple of real standout moments in that game. Mexes, the French defender, was sent off for making a great tackle, actually. It was a real harsh sending off. I think, obviously, the referee didn't see it, because from a certain angle, it does look as though he takes a man from behind and I think had already had a booking, but could have been a straight red anyway. But he's a great tackle. And he just went mental. Like, I've not seen anything like it for a while. People were having to...
Totti went mental a little while ago, didn't he? Maybe it's a Roma thing.
Yeah, let's hope so.
It was like the Warnock one at the weekend, where he should have been off for a second.
What was that one?
Stephen Warnock, yeah, it was shocking.
Before,
great game, that, actually.
Yeah,
Wolves Villa.
Oh, right.
He crossed it in.
Yeah. So Mexes has been banned for 3 matches on just because of the reaction. The reaction has got him a 3-match ban. Also in the game, though, Julio Sergio, the goalkeeper, went out and did an awful tackle on one of the Brescia players. Forget his name. And in the tackle, he damaged his ankle ligaments quite badly. But at the time, it was right towards the end of the game. I think it was about 5 minutes or something left. And Roma had already used all their subs, and so they were already down to 10 men. So he had to strap up his ankle and play through it. And he was actually crying.
Yeah, because I
was horrible. Really,
when this game was on, there were reports coming through on Twitter and things like that he'd actually broken his leg, because I originally thought it was that serious, and he still had to play on. It's a horrible image.
Why would they have just brought him off?
Seeing men cry.
A professional footballer who's worth millions and millions of pounds.
Yeah.
Why would they not just take him off? If I was the medical staff, I'd be very annoyed at the manager.
Do you think Zlatan would play on?
Would he bald?
No, Zlatan would be going in hard on the keeper in that situation. Any advantage?
Yeah. He scored. Milan, they won a game. They won 1-0 at home to Genoa. He scored 4 goals in 5 matches now for Milan.
He's doing well. He's got such big feet.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Interestingly enough, the Palermo owner, Maurizio Zamparini...
He's mental, that guy.
He is indeed. But God bless him for that. He's hailed Javier Pastore, the Argentinian player, as the new Zidane.
Well, that'll help him, won't it? Good move.
But apparently he's decent, though.
Oh, yeah, he's highly rated, isn't he?
It's Pastore, but yeah. He described him, he said, he is the new Zidane. He is very strong and complete.
Very complete.
Yeah, indeed. And he was, of course, made a couple of sub-appearances at the World Cup, so one to watch out for.
Last week, I believe it was, Zamperini actually said that Inter are the new Juventus. In that he thinks they're cheating. He's good value, that guy. We should keep our eyes on him.
Yeah. Who's the new Rolling Stones? That's everyone throws these sort of like accolades around, don't they, in the musical press?
Yeah. I don't remember one decent player that's ever just their career has been the next to someone else. You know what I mean? It's just a completely futile tag.
Indeed. Let's go to the Bundesliga. Steve McLaren's Wolfsburg won their third match in a row.
Yeah, he's turned it around, hasn't he?
Beating Freiburg 2-1. Because they lost the first three games, but they've seemingly turned it around.
I remember we mentioned this at the time, but he said, like, oh, I didn't realise it would be this hard. It seems like he's got his head around it, and he's obviously adapting quite quickly, which is good
to
see.
I'd love it. After that game, he went, well, I didn't realise it was going to be this easy.
This is piss.
Yeah. Bloody hell, I started trying. I turned up sober, and look what happened. that may or may not be true. Now, did you see this? It was the BBC reported on this, that on the weekend, Borussia Dortmund went away to Schalke, and the Dortmund fans have started a protest. 1,500 Dortmund fans returned their tickets, and even those who were unable to get refunds didn't travel. And this is because that they are not happy that they're being asked to pay more than €20 for a ticket.
Wow.
For this game. And these are two big German sides.
Yeah.
They were apparently last season Schalke were charging €13.50 for the same match, and so the price has been put up to €22. This is the same weekend, of course, that Liverpool played Manchester United, and the Liverpool travelling fans had to pay £51 for a ticket.
Exactly.
Now, you can argue that the quality is perhaps slightly higher at Old Trafford, but still, they're two big teams in Germany. And I mean, for crying out loud, the gulf is not that. By the way, we should mention that that isn't just a case of the Dortmund fans being annoyed at Schalke, because the Stefan Ursfeld from the German fanzine magazine Schwarzgeld said that the process is not aimed towards Schalke but against the price hike, which basically every club here in Germany is a part of. But the example I was going to use, which again the BBC use, is that when Schalke got their coach Felix Magath, he came in, and a lot of the fans were very unhappy because of the ticket prices and so on. And Magath said, oh, shut up and get on with it. And he came in and got rid of the club support liaison officer, who'd been working that job for 20 years, and just dismissed the fans' protests, saying that they were a small group of supporters. And that prompted 3,000 Schalke fans to wear T-shirts which had the slogan "The Small Group" on the front of them.
Nice.
And he had to change his managerial style, and he spent time talking to supporters before they signed Klaas-Jan Huntelaar from Milan. So I think it can be done. You know, it's interesting.
It's interesting as well, because Bundesliga has struggled for a while with losing its top players, and also in terms of it's struggled to attract a lot of the top players. I mean, Robin and Ribery are very much, Huntelaar as well, I guess, are very much sort of the exceptions to that, and Van der Vaart before that as well. And I don't claim to be an expert on the finances of German football, but perhaps this is sort of aimed at addressing that, if the clubs are trying to bring in more money so they can compete sort of more effectively in Europe again. That's probably the thinking behind it.
Yeah. Well, all to pay for.
Oh, good.
Thank you very much. Right then, let's get away from those who love money. David Beckham has been in Trinidad talking to Jack Warner.
Textbook.
Thank you very much. He's trying to get the World Cup vote. I don't like the way D-Beck's been dragged into this.
Well, you know, I do. It's like sending James Bond in. Brilliant.
Yeah, but when you hear Beckham say things like, it's been great having the opportunity of talking with Jack about the bid and our thoughts going into the final stages.
It is grotesque, isn't it? There's a good
he's referring to him as Jack. I know that's his name, but...
Well, everyone else has to call him Master, it's fine.
Fair enough.
I mean, he is the poster boy for the bid and stuff, but if that's what you got to do. Yeah. You've got to get down in the gutters.
Well,
I think Warner's boycott the World Cup.
Warner's been quite receptive to it, though, isn't he? He's actually been quite sort of sycophantic about it, whereas before before, he's just been very sort of damning of England's bid.
Wouldn't you be if you saw old David?
Oh, exactly. That's the thing. It's sending him in.
I saw a brilliant clip of him.
Oh, he's so shiny.
After a Galaxy match, and some bloke was shouting some libelous stuff at him, and he almost disappeared from view. And they just turned around, topless, glistening with sweat.
Yeah.
Just walked towards him like the Terminator. Say it to my face.
Say it to my wonderful face.
That's what he said. Yeah, he shouting, but the bloke went. The bloke's going rah, shouting the words, which what we repeated, and then when he turned, he goes, "Oh, he's coming! He's coming!" He got really worried.
What I love about Beckham though, because he does have a stare, and he must be hard.
It was that bit when he goes, "Mind the lady." Remember that one?
Yeah.
A couple of years ago.
Yeah,
someone was pushing, being pushed.
Bet he sweats like Evian.
But it's delicious.
Naughty. Well, while we're on the subject of those who are FIFA people, Jerome Valka has said that the South Africa 2010 World Cup was the best ever.
It was the best in 2010.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I didn't see any other better World Cup. I've suddenly got a lisp. I'm sorry about that.
Can you catch a lisp?
Well, clearly
oh, God.
I have. It was only a moment.
Are we going to get it?
I think it's over. Yeah, he said that this was rated as the best World Cup ever.
By who? And on what criteria? Because it wasn't, was it, frankly? By a long, long way.
You're only as good as your last World Cup.
I mean, he's clearly talking from like a sort of corporate FIFA point of view.
Yeah. We made a lot of money.
Yeah, we made a hell of a lot of money.
We displaced a lot of townships.
Yeah, we sat on this country that could do nothing about it and just watched the cash roll in.
But you know something? Old James Appel, to say his name again, he was saying that he reckons that Russia are going to get the World Cup.
That'd be interesting.
Because it fits in, as he said, it fits in to the whole FIFA thing of taking the World Cup to countries where it's never been had before and perhaps doesn't have such a strong footballing tradition like England does. And he says that Russia will pretty much say to FIFA, OK, you want to host it here, what do you want us to do?
Yeah.
Whereas, obviously, England's got certain traditions and so on and so forth in place. And it's more of a blank canvas for them.
Mm. Well, they just sort of go, yeah, exactly. They just want sort of patsy sort of countries with loads of oil money. That's the kind of that's kind of their
the cynical
oil view. And diamond money. That's what they need.
It's been cynical / realistic view.
Yeah, there's been a lot of support on our forum for the Australian bid, which I think would be quite interesting. I mean, the time zones would be a nightmare, but
when would matches be played?
Morning, because they think of Japan and South Korea.
Yeah,
it'd be similar, wouldn't it? I think. But yeah, again, also support for America. And somebody on the forum made a good point that obviously they've had USA 94, but this is like, is it the 2022 World Cup they're talking about?
Yeah, 2018 and 2022.
So, but yeah, by that time, it's a long
they'd
time
never
since
get
they had
that
it.
Again. Sure, they never get that in the next 4 years.
What about the Indonesian bid, Pete?
And think of the money involved, though. In America, it would be absolutely huge. And the game is taking off there now in a way that hasn't been seen for since Nazzle. And it seems to have sort of, you know, it seems to have sort of very firm roots now as well.
Yeah. And some of them are highlighted roots.
Mm.
Right. Well, it's time for me to nip off to Diego Corner.
Oh, it's the corner that keeps on giving.
And I've just got there. Right, well, in Luke's absence, I will take up the reins and the keys of Diego Corner and go in. And Diego's in here and he's saying that he wants to coach Argentina again. Yep, we're back to this. he said that he'll even get rid of his much criticised assistants to return to the role. That was the problem before. Grondona said you can't have this assistant and that assistant, knowing that Diego would say, well, I'm going to quit. And he says, well, fine, then off you go. But Maradona is saying that he's going to go back on that. And he said, I'd give my life to be the national team coach. I'm dying to be with the team and I am thirsty for revenge.
It's like he's bagged his dream woman and then started playing hard to get. Do you know, it's crazy. Because he had the opportunity to stay on, didn't he, apparently, but they didn't want to keep his backroom stuff.
That's right.
The Argentinian FA said,
just
we'll...
Just don't keep his back.
Yeah. But isn't he now saying that, you know, he'll get rid of them and, you know, he'll do whatever to have the job now when
Pretty much,
Batista is in place, isn't he?
I think this is probably in response to him realising that he can't get any other job in football.
And he owes the Italian government millions of pounds.
He can't exactly turn up in Italy very soon. He said that, because he obviously was interested in a number of roles, and he said, with regards to the Mexico and Portugal jobs, he said, the Mexicans said they didn't want me. The Portuguese, I don't know.
They never got back to me.
They'd never even replied to him. And I think it was at that moment he thought, yeah, I'm going to have to get my old job back.
He's like that bit in The Office where Brent comes back with a dog. Going, look at me, look, I've got a little dog.
Is that what he's like?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
That's probably, that's
fair
I
enough.
Yes. I've got an email, Marcus.
Oh, have you?
Yes.
It's from Jack Barclay. From, as he says, Worcester, Mumbai and Baquio.
Right.
I'm not really sure how this fits in, but maybe I'll explain in the email.
Are they twinned?
Dear Rambleforce, at the age of 16, and as a big football fan, I have played many football matches, be it on the playground or in a Sunday league match. However, I'm also lucky to have travelled to many places in the world, such as India, Australia and Spain, or more precisely, the Basque Country.
Ooh.
He was one of those kids, one of the posh kids, who had lots of holidays, I bet, in school.
Basque, that ain't a country.
Yeah. It was in India and in Spain that I enjoyed playing football the most. Whilst in India, I managed to play in a spontaneous match against some Indian Olympians, which to my ignorant surprise was more challenging than expected. Although the group I was with came away with a 2-1 win, so he's quite pleased.
Genuine achievement.
In Spain, I played in an even more spontaneous beach match against a group of Ugandan dancers who were visiting Spain for a festival. Both matches were just a complete joy to play in, and it was a nice change from the wet Windy Night in Bolton style games I play in for my local team. My question to you is, what is the most spontaneous / obscure / enjoyable match you have been involved in, and what made it so special? Keep up the good rambling. Jack Barclay, Worcester, Mumbai and Baquio.
Jack,
you know, boys, this is going to give me an excuse to talk about my travels.
You're doing your Alan Wicker bit. Alan Pricker.
It was pretty good, though.
Yeah, it was good.
Now, I hate going on about it. but I did visit South America once upon a time.
Yes.
With my good friend Slappy. And we got caught up in a game in the Ecuadorian rainforest.
Wow.
Yeah.
With a couple of monkeys.
I scored a hat-trick.
Cool.
We lost, though. We played the tour guides and we got beat 10-8. Can you imagine the humidity?
When you say the jungle...
I mean, where was the room for... Was it just lots of goalposts? That's a goal.
No, it was the tour guides...
Hat-trick.
Very dense.
There was a clear space.
A clear space.
Yeah, I said, right, let's have a bit of deforestation. I want to play football. And they'd sort of erected these goalposts. Yeah, it sounded like erection, that word. And... we started playing. It was 4v4, and it was an incredibly flat, heavy ball. It was
like a bongo advert.
we got beat 10-8, but I scored 3 goals. Yeah. Are you happy? I was so sweaty that and the showers were broke.
Oh, well, you're so hairy as
showers.
Well.
Yeah,
well, in the jungle.
I'm surprised you weren't befriended by a simian. And, with that hair.
Well, maybe I was. But I daren't go in the river to wash because there were piranhas in there.
He daren't, everyone.
Yeah. That's just one example.
Smart move, though, mate.
My second example was on the same trip. I was in the salt flats in Bolivia, and they had like a little concrete pitch. There were proper goals and all, and we had a marvellous time.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That sounds like some really weird, kind of surreal dream.
Yeah.
Just playing on a concrete pitch on some salt flat with you.
Is it?
Odd. It's a good
take
dream.
Me out of the equation, does it? The dream element is removed.
Well, it's just lonelier.
Yeah, that was class.
My story is not as sophisticated or classy.
Anyway, back to the UK.
Yeah, in fact, I don't think I even played in the game myself. It was just after the I think it was Euro 2004, and England had just beaten Switzerland. And
you got the last 10, did you?
I was in a pub in Romford. Such
you see,
classy individual that I am.
You started kicking someone's head around.
Yeah,
people come to me for escapism, and they get harsh reality.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm telling it how
it's
it
like
is.
Like Avatar mixed with Shane Meadows.
and basically this game just broke out in the car park with about 30 or 40 people in it, and there can't have been that many. I'm just exaggerating that, that in my mind. But there were a lot of people playing it, and there was just like broken glass all over the place, and it was like, I think it got to a point where it was like shirts and skins. Someone had a ball just from somewhere. Everyone was hammered, and it was, people were very quickly exhausted. And a few people got injured because, you know, concrete, glass, drunkenness, bad, you know, is a simple equation which I'm sure we can all live by. And it was just, it was a lot of fun though. It was great because it was a genuine sense of euphoria that was being expressed by just people being, having so much energy from watching the game. It was a really lovely moment. Don't know why I didn't play.
Glass?
Oh yeah, rubbish.
You were throwing glasses at people.
Well, you know, someone had to do it. We were in Romford.
Fair enough.
I got the short straw.
Mine was probably the one that I've already did on this ramble before with that football match that that broke up between me, a couple of friends, and Michael Brown, the Hartlepool and Man City
Hatchet
legend.
Man.
And then that man who turned up on a bike and who looked like Trevor Sinclair.
So how you got that weird elbow injury?
With
Michael Brown going in hard?
No, that was unrelated. Unrelated, but and then a man turned up with a hammer and all kinds of.
Did we have any spontaneous games of football in South Africa?
We didn't. I remember shouting at everyone that we didn't kick a football in anger.
No, we didn't.
We had a tennis ball we kicked around in the flat, as I recall. Broke a couple of things.
They might be listening.
Nice gramophone they had. I nearly broke that a few times.
I
had my tears I was chasing you around with.
That's on the Facebook.
That's good,
I've mentioned my mate Slappy there. He inquired about the Dean Windass Hall of Fame. He said, when someone is inducted and you give them a round of applause, what he imagines is, you know, like stars in their eyes. Well, they kind of
come out of a set of doors.
There you go, Tony
Adams,
into the Dean Windass Hall of Fame.
And thank you very much.
And he goes through one door and he comes out the other, and all the other inductees are in the crowd clapping him. But he comes through, and he is Tony Adams in his peak with his Arsenal kit on the other side.
All right,
wrinkles away. Bang. Not that he's that old. So like Dennis Bergkamp would sort of strut out maybe with his Dutch kit of 98 or something.
Just fresh off the pitch after scoring that hat-trick against Leicester,
What's
going on here?
Exactly. That's what happens. Jack Charlton, I was about to say, has a full head of hair, but no, he doesn't.
No, he never did.
Oh, dear.
He was bald even as a baby.
That's a very good point.
Before we move away from the emails, I've got some internet-related palaver, which is kind of like an email. It's not. It's a Facebook status. It's a simple Facebook status. Mm. It's a good friend of the ramble, James Cox.
James Cox.
I just wanted to read this out because I saw it yesterday. Kicking my phone around the kitchen really hasn't helped fix it. So I think that's a lesson in for all of us that we can learn in life and take something from there. So thank you very much, Coxie.
Yeah.
Good. This is strange and nice at the same time.
This is the same lad who supports Chelsea, yet when Fulham... which game was it? Was it when they beat Hamburg?
I don't know, mate. It's your anecdote.
It was in the Europa League semi-final, and they beat Hamburg 2-1. And when they scored the second, there he is, James Cox, watching the game with his girlfriend. Hmm. And he ran around the living room going, "Oh, I love football!"
Oh, bless him.
And that all means, ladies and gentlemen, it's profile time.
Profile time.
Yes. See? Right. Well, this week we've got the man the fans call Super Ali. Ali McCoist, MBE.
A rare blue in the Dean Windass Hall of Fame.
Yes.
There's only Paul Gascoigne in, isn't there, really?
I think so.
Mm. Yeah. How many Celtic players have we got in?
We've got Jimmy Johnson and Henrik Larsson. Roy Keane.
Keane, yeah.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. There's a few.
Yeah.
Is Barnes in there?
John Barnes?
No.
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 Would we even mention his time at Celtic if we could bring him?
It's very true. Very true indeed. Alistair Murdoch McCoist.
I did not know his
name. I'm delighted with that.
Wonderful.
Not quite Alan Valderrama, but still. Let's not go there. He was born on the 24th of September 1962, so a very recent birthday.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, 1962. Count the fingers.
One, two, three, four, five. 5 years.
Five years. Fingers before, before the
5 years before the
glove.
Summer of love. Luke, would you come back? Indeed. He's a Scottish great.
Mm.
A goal-scoring legend. He's got legendary status in Scotland, certainly.
Well, again, we've discussed this before. One of those men who his media career hasn't tarnished his footballing career, like Gary Lineker, like people like that. I would sort of use the Gary Lineker example.
Yeah,
he's a television presenter who.
You could even say, actually, he's kind of like the Scottish equivalent of Gary Lineker.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Very similar kind of players. Yeah. Both had media careers.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah.
Both quite jocular.
Yeah, likeable chaps. Like the women.
Every man.
Good looking.
Allegedly.
I'm sort of going...
Good looking Gary
Lineker. You're just, enthusing about Lineker and McCoist.
Yeah,
he's got a tan.
He's got more tanned legs.
You got tan
legs. Like McCoy.
You've gone giddy with lust. It's weird. You're saying things and jiggling around.
Nines.
quintessential number nine. Yeah. Good point. He began his professional life as a baby, as a teenager at St Johnson.
As a baby, is that good?
Yeah. No one's touching my babies.
Started out in Rangers under nuns.
Yeah. Careful. McCoyster, he was training with St Mirren as a 16-year-old, but he was rejected for being too small by Alex Ferguson.
Ooh, rare misjudgment.
Yeah. It's not a subplot, though. It ends there. He had 19 appearances in two seasons with St Johnston when he signed for them. He scored 22 goals in 38 games for them. And that's...
Not bad then, yeah?
Yeah, well, yeah. So he went to Sunderland, Pete, a club you're fond of, for £400,000, which was a lot of money back then. Although he didn't do too well at Sunderland, although he was quite liked by the fans, actually. He didn't score many goals there, and he stayed there for a couple of seasons. And then he returned to Scotland, to Rangers, in 1983 for £185,000. And my giddy aunt was he to have a time and a half there.
I want to meet this aunt. Yeah. You mention her a lot. She sounds mental.
My giddy grandfather. In 15 years as a Rangers player, he smashed all their striking records, and I would imagine they probably won't be beaten.
Probably one in one, more or less, isn't he? He's a one in one man.
He had a great time there. He made his debut against St Mirren, actually the side he played for, in the 83-84 season, and he scored 9 goals that year. But as the years went by, he was certainly to score a few more. In 85-86, he got 24 goals, and because of his happy-go-lucky kind of nature and likeable chap that he was, he soon earned the nickname Super Alley. And in the 86-87 season, he scored 34 goals, which was to be his highest tally in one season, which he would do a couple more times. Then, of course, Graham Souness took over at Rangers in 1986. And a couple of years went by. McCoist was playing well. He was up front with Mo Johnson. Do you remember Mo Johnson?
Mm. Yeah.
And
recently was in America, wasn't he?
Oh, that's right, yeah. And or was it Canada he's in?
No, yes, it was, of course. It was in Vancouver, I believe. Or was it Toronto? It was one of them.
He's in North America.
Yes.
He had a great partnership with Mo Johnson. And then they signed Mark Hatley. And I think McCoy sort of clashed with Souness, because Souness is obviously a very serious man.
Yeah.
You don't cross Souness. And McCoy's a little bit of a joker, a little bit of a cheeky chappy. And he found himself on the bench quite a bit, which got him the nickname The Judge. which I quite like, actually. So the Johnson and McCoy's partnership kind of stopped, which was a very effective partnership, and it was Johnson and Hatley. Then Mo Johnson left, Walter Smith took charge, and Hatley and McCoy formed a deadly partnership, which was to rip all sorts of shreds out of other teams in Scotland. And he went to Italia 90 with Scotland, but he didn't start any games for Scotland. He had a bit of a funny international career, McCoist, which we'll talk about throughout. But in 91-92, which was quite possibly his best season, he scored 34 goals, and he won both the Players' Player of the Year and the Sports Writers' Award when Rangers completed a domestic treble. And what accolade did he win, Petey, that year?
Did he win the European Golden Boot?
He did indeed, Pete.
He did.
And it was the first time a Scot had won the award, and I think it was the only time, I'd imagine.
Yeah, you would think so.
Well, he repeated that the year later. Now,
well, then it wasn't the only time, was it?
Oh, dear.
Silly. Tricked us.
Yeah. So he won it 2 years in a row. In a row? In a row?
You're getting into this, isn't you? You're getting back to your Scottish roots.
That was when the European Golden Boot, of course, was That was when it wasn't ranked on a point system, right, like it is now. So a goal was a goal anywhere, you know, rather than certain points for certain goals. Right. There was a few years, of course, when it was like that. But still, he's got the accolade. He's won it 2 years in a row, which is quite some achievement, really. He broke his leg playing for Scotland in Portugal in 93, and he missed the last seven games of the season in the Scottish Cup final. But he still scored 34 goals that season, wow, even missing eight games. And then
that's a real shame for him, actually, given that was the number each time. Yeah, that's a real missed opportunity for him to sort of beat his own record.
Yeah, a shame for the big man. But he came back, of course, and I think it was about 6 months later. He came on against Hibs in the Scottish Cup final, League Cup final, and McCoist was a bastard for scoring a winning goal. Do you know what I mean? It was kind of like, oh, we need something. I'll get Ali on, you know.
Yeah,
and he scored an overhead kick.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a spectacular one, but still, it's Ali McCoist.
Well, no. It will have been.
Well, yeah, okay.
Is it possible to score an unspectacular overhead kick?
It was one of those sort of, less of a scissor kick, more of a lean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sort of back volley, that's what you call it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm still impressed with those, purely because I just would not be able to coordinate it myself.
He scored 28 hat-tricks for Rangers.
Wow.
That's ridiculous. absolutely ridiculous.
That is loads of hat-tricks.
Yeah. And he's second in the list of Rangers scorers in Old Firm games with a total of 27.
I wonder who... Sorry, just on a tangent. I wonder who is the... Who holds the record for scoring the most hat-tricks in football? So get on that, Ramble Force.
Fernando Perez.
So we don't have to.
Maybe.
Probably will be Perez, yes, but we'll see.
Good call, James. He holds the record for league and European goals for Rangers, and he was the club's leading scorer in 9 of his 15 seasons. Bearing in mind a couple of them he was injured quite a bit for. He just a quintessential poacher.
Yeah.
Loved getting on the end of moves and crosses and whatnot in and around the penalty area.
He just knew exactly where the corner was. Yeah, I remember he was always stroking balls over the, like, just to the right or left of the keeper. And it's more. It would be more sort of odd to see him not score than score. Yeah. He seemed to be always on the score
just
sheet.
Accurate, wasn't he? He was just one of those players that once, almost like Van Nistelrooy when he's in the box, it's just like, you know, he's going to score. Like, just.
He was class. I mean, he was the right place at the right time kind of player. And it was funny because a lot of fans who weren't Rangers fans, of course, would often go, oh, he never scores a good goal. Well, he did actually score a few goals. But it was like, no, he's just right place, right time sort of kind of player. And I thought, well,
that's a very good skill in itself, isn't it? That's very good positioning is obviously a very big part of the game.
That's the kind of stuff that you can't teach sometimes. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of it's just natural for him to do that. And a good footballing brain as well. Mm.
You know. Gerard Houllier was quoting Shankly this week about Emil Heskey and sort of saying, if you miss a sitter, at least you're in the position to miss that sit.
Yeah.
Which I quite like.
An expression I've held dear all my life.
At least I was there.
Yeah, that's right. He's only one of three players to have featured in all the 9 in a row titles that Rangers won, famous 9 in a row. The others were Richard Gough and Ian Ferguson, incidentally.
That was some achievement, that.
Oh, it's incredible. Equal in Celtic's record.
I bet Celtic were delighted to not...
I don't think that will probably ever happen again. I wouldn't have thought. He played at Euro 96, which was the other big highlight for Scotland, and he never started against England. He was brought on, and he was just the type of player who you just think, with him, you know, had they have played him against England, he's just likely to score in a game like that.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, he would always score against Celtic. You know, you always get goals in cup finals.
But he's like a sort of, I don't know, just sort of like Ian Wright or something. All these players that didn't have a decent England career who were always scoring for their club.
Yeah, Robbie Fowler, Celez.
You know. It's weird, isn't it? It's weird how it doesn't translate. Or
Andy Cole,
the wrong place, wrong time. Yeah.
He did get one though, a beauty against Switzerland in Euro 96, a right pinger from outside the box, and a lovely celebration, runs over to Craig Brown, and you can see him as he runs over so passionately about scoring, and he goes to hug him and he thinks, no, it's the gaffer, and he gives him a hand. But it was a shame for Scotland, because of course that would have taken him through with England, the goal difference apart from when Patrick Kluivert scored. But he was always a player, again, in qualifiers, who he would just excite the fans when he was brought on. You know, His last match for Rangers was in the 1998 Scottish Cup final, which they actually lost 2-1 against Hearts, but he did score the goal. And it's funny because if you look at his honours with Rangers, he won 10 league championships, 9 league cups, but only 1 Scottish Cup. It's quite funny really that, that kind of eluded him so many times. And then of course he played for Kilmarnock after that. He played there for 3 years before retiring, and then he moved into the media world. And he had a career in the media whilst he was going on at the I forget the name of the show, but it was with Macaulay. Fred Macaulay? Frank Macaulay? He's a Scottish celebrity. You might not have heard of him.
No.
When he was on Not Do You Think It's Over, what was the...
It was I Think It's Over, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was on Question of Sport. And then he joined up with Walter Smith with the Scottish national team, and then as Rangers assistant manager to Walter Smith currently. And I'd imagine, I wouldn't imagine Walter Smith saying that he could be Rangers manager in the future. It should be remarkable. He's also done a little bit of acting.
Really?
Yeah,
he was in
Shot at Glory with Robert Duvall. Is that good? Have you seen it?
No, I've seen the clips with Ally McCoyston. I'll stick them up on RambleTube this week. It's a piece of work. It really is.
Marvellous. Wooden, would you say?
No, Wooden, he's quite good at it. But if you look, it's just seeing someone so far out of their comfort zone. It's almost as if they're screaming, "What am I doing?"
He was awarded an MBE in 94 for his services to Scottish football, and he was inducted to the Scottish Sports Hall of Fame in 2007.
The one for the Dean Windass Hall.
That's right. He's also a member of the Scottish Football Hall of Fame, and now he's going to have stars in his eyes because he's coming into the Dean Windass Hall of Fame, ladies and gentlemen.
In you come, Ali. I'm picturing the doors opening, there's dry ice coming out now, everyone in there waving him in.
Marvellous.
Lovely stuff.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the Football Ramble. I hope you've had a lovely time.
The Football Ramble, of course, has been renamed this week. Or rather, the Football Ramble hasn't really been renamed. The actual title of the show has been named. I threw it out on the Twitter and the forum, basically.
You never.
I did. If you go to the forum, there's all kinds of bits and bobs in there. But today, I gave the Forumites, because that's what they're called.
The Forumites.
The Ramble Forum.
They sound like a sort of rock formation.
Yeah. The chance to name this show. So, well done to Carl Shepherd, who named Garforth and Manage, which
nice.
I quite like. Paul Gascoigne obviously going to Garforth Town, so go forth. And manage.
The joke works. You don't have to explain it, Pete. It's fine.
You know what people are like.
That is, of course, on the new lovely twinkly eyed Football Ramble website.
Star Spangled, I think it's called.
Star Spangled. The Football Ramble.
The forum's a lot of fun.
TheFootballRamble.com. TheFootballRamble.com.
TheFootballRamble.com.
Any more for any more?
Well, the blogs on there.
Oh,
they
yes,
need a read, don't they?
Far away, James. Far
away. Oh, yeah. Well, there's blogs from James Appel, who we've mentioned a couple of times on the show. Andy Brassel, actual journalist. Andy Brassel.
Actual journalist. Joel Richards.
Joel Richards, actual journalist. Yeah, well, they are, aren't they? There's Rupert Fryer and Brian Maxwell from South American Football. UK, Chris Nee from Two Footed Tackle, there's me.
Yeah. Our man in Pyongyang, the man from behind the wall of... Do they have a wall?
The iron
Let's make
wall.
That clear. The communist wall. Of, the firewall. They've got a big firewall, haven't they? Mm.
Yeah, they call it the Great Firewall of China, is that right? But I think that's specifically for China.
Good.
Oh, well.
There we are. Right, well, that gives me just about enough time to say goodbye, James or Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We're all off to Trinidad to Sweet Talk Jack Warner. Cheers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.